This is the Breaker.News podcast for March 11th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this episode, regular features such as the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines from around the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines from around the Pacific Northwest, The Big Deal feature, the legacy of the late Roger Bannister, the Miracle Mile champion of the 1954 Vancouver British Empire Games, with Jason Beck of the BC Sports Hall of Fame, and The Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo Bar to those who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is Brenda Luckey going to face an uphill battle as the first woman to head the RCMP? The new commissioner of the National Police Force is charged with changing the toxic culture inside one of Canada's oldest institutions. The day she was named, International Women's Day, was when CBC reported on yet another case of perverse behavior inside the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Surrey, BC Corporal Dave Duplessis is under investigation for texting insults about black policemen and Black Lives Matter, and for appearing in a photograph performing fellatio on an eggplant. Yes, you heard that correctly. Duplessis is accused of bullying by a young constable who was fired. The Supreme Court of Canada ruled that the RCMP should have a union for its employees, but that has not happened yet. Female officers and civilian employees who were harassed and abused sued, and they will benefit from a $100 million settlement fund. Male officers who suffered from the toxic culture are also suing, but there is no settlement yet. So good luck to Brenda Luckey. She heads an organization that must serve and protect Canadians and bring the bad guys and bad gals to justice. She also has to clean up the force of so many bad apples and their legacy. Canadians deserve and expect nothing less than that. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim, where we look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Julian Ryle reports, 7 years later, why hasn't Japan learned anything from Fukushima? Cancer rates in children are sky high, radioactive rubbish is piling up, and radiation levels are rising, yet the government bails out the plant's operator, TEPCO, even as it announces a profit and plans to resume seaside operations. 7 years after the worst natural disaster to strike Japan in living memory, a handful of people whose homes, schools, and livelihoods were in villages that were directly beneath the plume of radioactivity that escaped from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant were this week permitted to return briefly to their communities. The magnitude 9 earthquake off northeast Japan triggered a series of massive tsunami that caused widespread devastation in coastal regions and wrecked the nuclear plant. Officially, more than 18,000 people died in the March 11, 2011 triple disaster. Of that total, the remains of 2,546 have never been recovered. In the Sydney Morning Herald, Andrew Hornery reports that bedridden mogul exercises power by email. March 11th is Rupert Murdoch's 87th birthday, but more than 2 months after his fall on son Lachlan Murdoch's yacht in the Caribbean, the media mogul remains mostly bedridden in California, as rumors swirl in Sydney that his condition is far more grave than the world has been told. Associates of Murdoch were talking about the prospect of the aging media titan never walking again. However, insiders have played down the nefarious chatter, pointing out that he was on his feet during a cocktail party, albeit briefly, at his Bel Air Vineyard, Moraga Estate for a News Corp and 21st Century Fox's board of directors meeting just over a week ago. A News Corp spokeswoman told PS on Friday, Rupert is recovering well and doing great. Insiders report that the octogenarian remains firmly in control, even from his bedroom, with regular emails bombarding his lieutenants across the world, some noticeably more demanding and with greater frequency in recent times. no doubt exacerbated by his excruciating pain. Long-term friends have revealed that his condition has caused considerable anxiety for his fourth wife, Jerry Hall, who has been by his side throughout his painful ordeal. And finally, NBCBayArea.com reports, coffee shop in Oakland refuses to serve police officers, by Sergio Quintana. A controversy is brewing at a coffee shop in Oakland where police officers are not welcome. The business, called Hasta Muerte Coffee, will not serve officers in uniform and turned away an officer a few weeks ago. The shop is an employee-owned co-op. Workers at Hasta Muerte, which means until death in Spanish, did not respond to requests for comment on the policy to refuse service to police officers. But on the shop's Instagram account, there is a photo posted with text that reads in Spanish, "Talk to your neighbors, not the police." The post continues about an exchange with an uniformed officer on February 16th, and very clearly it states, "We have a policy of asking police to leave for the physical and emotional safety of our customers and ourselves." The Oakland Police Officers Association sent the shop a letter asking to open a dialogue about its policy. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Tri-City Herald, Annette Carey reports, Hanford missteps expose workers to radioactive contamination, report says. What went wrong in December during demolition of the nuclear reservation's highly polluted plutonium finishing plant? The primary radioactive air monitors used at a highly hazardous Hanford project were not up to the job, said a report by contractor CH2M Hill. Radioactive particles were found well beyond the demolition zones where they were supposed to be contained. They spread across Hanford streets, were found at other Hanford projects, and, in air samples collected over months, were detected in very small amounts near areas where the public is allowed. At least 11 Hanford workers checked since mid-December inhaled or ingested small amounts of radioactive particles. Private and government vehicles were contaminated with radioactive particles, and some were driven into the Tri-Cities. Cairo TV Seattle's David Solano reports, Tully's Coffee closing its doors temporarily. Tully's Coffee, which is the company that was supposed to give Starbucks a run for its money, is closing its doors for now. It is blaming a lack of coffee. In the Puget Sound Business Journal, Coral Garnick reports, Tully's Coffee owner represents Stormy Daniels in lawsuit against Donald Trump. Michael Avenatti has been retained as the lawyer representing porn star Stormy Daniels, whose real name is Stephanie Clifford, in her lawsuit against President Donald Trump, saying he never signed their 2016 non-disclosure agreement. Avenatti is the lawyer who bought Tully's Coffee out of bankruptcy proceedings 5 years ago. The lawyer has gone back and forth with Bellevue Square for years over shutting down a Tully's Coffee shop at Bellevue Square Mall. He is now in a licensing fees battle with Keurig Green Mountain, which owns the rights to the Tully's name. Avenatti's company, Global Baristas, denied wrongdoing and filed a countersuit but did not respond to requests for more information. Global Baristas also faces lawsuits from Seattle-area landlords seeking unpaid rent and damages, some of which have ended in eviction, such as the Exchange Building downtown. Finally, in the Times columnist, Cleve Deanshaw reports, she took up skiing to help with her cerebral palsy. Now she's at the Paralympics. Para-alpine skier Mel Pemble of Victoria was true to her word. She was only 14 when she won two medals at the 2015 Canada Winter Games in Prince George. After that achievement, she said, "Some say I might be a bit young yet for Pyeongchang, but that's my goal, and I'm going to keep going and see where it takes me." She is now in Pyeongchang, South Korea, at the 2018 Winter Paralympics. Pemble was born with cerebral palsy and immigrated to Vancouver Island from England with her family in 2009. Her family thought it might be helpful for her to get into a physical activity. Meanwhile, skier Braden Luscombe of Duncan, a veteran of Sochi 2014, will compete in his second Winter Paralympics in 5 events over the next 2 weeks in Pyeongchang. It has been quite a journey since he skied as a teenage volunteer forerunner to help groom the course for the competitors in his home province at the 2010 Vancouver Winter Paralympics. The 25-year-old Vancouver Islander lost a leg to amputation after contracting a flesh-eating disease when he was only 4 years old. A gifted artist who designs tattoos, Luscombe began skiing on Mount Washington at age 6 and has competed in World Para-Ski Championships in 2013, 2015, and 2017 with 3 top 10 finishes and a bronze medal from earlier this year in the 2018 World Cup Downhill Final. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for the Big Deal feature. On March 3rd, the world lost Sir Roger Bannister, one of the greatest athletes in history. The prominent neurologist died at age 88. In a cruel irony, Bannister had suffered with Parkinson's disease. On May 6, 1954, Bannister became the first to run the mile in under 4 minutes. He did it again on August 7, 1954 at Empire Stadium in Vancouver, defeating John Landy of Australia in the British Empire and Commonwealth Games.
Bannister is kicking very definitely. He's passing Landy. Landy looked the wrong way. Dr. Roger Gilbert Bannister of England over John Michael Landy of Australia, 1-2. And Rich Ferguson of Canada was third. What else do you say?
The British Empire Games put Vancouver on the map. They were broadcast internationally on the new medium of television and were featured in the first edition of Sports Illustrated. The Miracle Mile was the greatest sports moment on Canadian soil. The pivotal moment in the race is frozen in time in Jack Harmon's statue based on Charlie Warner's photograph, which stands at Empire Fields. One man knows the games better than most. He is Jason Beck, the curator of the British Columbia Sports Hall of Fame and Museum at BC Place Stadium. Jason is the author of The Miracle Mile, Stories of the 1954 British Empire and Commonwealth Games. Welcome, Jason, to the Breaker.News podcast.
What was Roger Bannister's legacy in both British Columbia and Canada?
Well, in British Columbia, I mean, he was the key, or one of the two key figures in, you know, the biggest event to happen, biggest sports event to happen in British Columbia to that point in 1954. That was a moment that really elevated Vancouver, put it on the world sports map. You know, the world map in a lot of ways. That was what surprised me when I was doing my research is, yeah, they covered the Miracle Mile around the world in sports sections, and newspapers, television. But it wasn't just a sports story. It was a news story. I found hundreds of newspapers around the U.S. that had that as the lead story on their front page above the fold. And there wasn't an American in the race. There wasn't a single American athlete in the Commonwealth game or the British Empire and Commonwealth Games that year. That shocked me. This was a world news story. It's not often you can say that Vancouver is, you know, the site of the top news story on any given day. It's probably only happened maybe a handful of times in the city's history. So there's that. In terms of Canada, that was, to that point, the biggest event that Canada, biggest international sports event that Canada had hosted. There have been several since that have eclipsed it. I mean, in Vancouver alone, the Vancouver 2010 Olympics, certainly a more elaborate, larger event. Did it reach the worldwide audience? That's arguable. I'd say probably not. A lot more countries around the world follow athletics than do ice hockey or bobsleigh. So I think in 1954 we may have hit a wider worldwide audience. So for Canada, you know, that's a big deal. Again, that doesn't happen very often.
And with the Empire Games, it left also the legacy of Empire Stadium, which led eventually to Canadian Football League, the BC Lions, right off the bat, and a couple decades later, North American Soccer League, Vancouver Whitecaps. The Empire Stadium eventually needed to be replaced, and that was Erwin Swongard, the president of the P&E. His idea for a multiplex on the P&E grounds was taken by the provincial government and turned into what became BC Place on the shores of False Creek
That's right.
Eventually Expo 86, eventually the 2010 Winter Olympics. So you can see the dominoes that fell starting with that summer of 1954.
We became a destination all of a sudden. It elevated us, it elevated the city to the point where we were now a sports destination that could host big events and host them successfully. Before that, there really hadn't been anything, nothing close to that level. But you're right. I always point out the three professional teams almost immediately after, in the Lions case, literally the next week. And that the Lions would not have come around if it hadn't been for Empire Stadium. I saw that in numerous points in my research. If they didn't build that stadium, we were not getting a CFL team. And then who knows what happens from there? Maybe the NHL just bypasses us because we're still a small town.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you learn about Roger Bannister while researching the book?
He was an amazing human being, not just an athlete. You know, if he had just ran that first sub 4 minute mile, won the Empire Games gold, people would remember him as a great athlete, but there is so much more to his life beyond that. That's what amazed me. I mean, he later worked in sport. He, was key to early drug testing in Britain. He held some high positions in British sport. He worked for Oxford University. He was also a neurologist, a very, very respected neurologist worldwide. He received kind of the top award, a Lifetime Achievement Award in neurology about 15 years ago. When I talked to him about all these different aspects of his life, he always downplayed his running. He always downplayed athletics. He always said that his medical career and his family were his biggest accomplishments. He got into great detail on his medical career. I don't have a medical background, so I listened politely, and it sounded impressive. That was what he was really proud of. I wanted to get into like his training and his running, and he was so modest about it. That was the other thing, is his modesty. I think he was more comfortable talking about other athletes and other events than himself. And there was definitely, he carried himself with a great dignity as well as that modesty.
And what did he remember about Vancouver?
Loved the city. That was the first thing he said. And that was common when I talked to these athletes from 54. But Bannister, he called it one of his favorite cities in the world. He loved it here. He came back many times, as you know. I think the next time was for the Bannister and Landy Jack Harmon bronze statue. But he came back at least four times that I could tell. And there was likely other times when it was more under the radar. Vancouver definitely remained, it held a tender spot for him. I know Landy said that between Melbourne, Sydney, and Vancouver, those were his three favorite cities. And I heard this from many athletes. A lot of them came back after the games. They'd never been here before. A lot of them had never heard of Vancouver before. And some of them even moved to Canada and moved to BC permanently from the games here. I think we take for granted what we have here in our own backyard.
What can people learn about the British Empire Games, about Roger Bannister at the museum?
Yeah, we have a signature exhibition that's been up for just about 4 years now. We put it up for the 60th anniversary of the games. It's called A Week You'll Remember a Lifetime. And it's a large, elaborate exhibit that covers every aspect of the games. There's an area on all nine sports. But the largest area is on track and field, because that really was the popular event, the most popular sport there. And a lot of it deals with Roger Bannister and John Landy in the Miracle Mile, and the collapse of the marathoner, Jim Peters. So you can actually see the original CBC broadcast footage of the mile. You can see artifacts from the track and field events. We've got a pair of Jim Peters marathon shoes that he actually wore in that race in Vancouver. There's excerpts from my book that are included. Basically, the research for that exhibit came from all the research that I had already had gathered for the Miracle Mile book itself. There's about, in total, there's probably about I'd say maybe about 40 minutes in footage. A lot of color footage too, which is really interesting. There was an Australian swim coach that was in town. He had a really good camera and he filmed everything. Swimming events, track and field events. We have color footage of the Miracle Mile. It's extremely rare. Brought it over to the CBC and they asked me what network had shot that. And I said it was just an Australian swimming coach. And their jaws dropped. They said, this is incredible footage. So there's a lot of things you can see there that you can't see anywhere else. The highlight artifact really is a stopwatch. It's one of the 25 stopwatches that was used to time the Miracle Mile. And it still stopped at Roger Bannister's winning time of 3 minutes, 58.8 seconds. We have 27,000 artifacts in our collection. And I'm biased, but I think most people would say that has to be top three in terms of significance out of those 27,000 plus artifacts. It's literally a moment that's a significant moment that's been stopped in time for over 60 years. The first time I held that stopwatch with white gloves, when I was doing some cleaning, that's actually what initially inspired me to write the Miracle Mile. It was this weird moment where I realized, wow, like that moment is in my hand right now. It crossed a lot of different barriers of time and space. It was a cool moment for me.
For more information about the British Columbia Sports Hall of Fame and the British Empire Games exhibit, and where you can buy Jason Beck's book about the 1954 games, go to bcsportshalloffame.com. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to members of British Columbia's Legislative Assembly who have chosen to allow all MLAs who are parents to bring infants into the legislature. Before you say there are already too many crybabies in politics, think of the possibilities, such as better behavior in the presence of children who are 2 years old or younger. Maybe no more clapping, no more cheering, and no more desk thumping during question period. Former Delta Independent MLA Vicky Huntington proposed banning applause to save time and to get more work done. She estimated it cost 20 minutes a week or 3.5 hours per session. That's enough time to ask 100 more questions. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Well, that's it for the Breaker.News podcast for March 11th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas. Send email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until the end of March, support The Breaker through Patreon and you will receive a free copy of my ebook, Red Mittens and Red Ink, The Vancouver Olympics. Again, that's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.